Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Well, these are the last days of Morning Sedition, a bold experiment that did not go unappreciated by thousands of people who got it. Well, we're not going to disappoint you, people. This last week will be a bash of great guests, clips from the past, bittersweet reverie. Today we have Barbara Boxer. Jim Walcott will be with us. David Poland's going to be here later in the week. We're going to have Eric Bogosian, Robert Reich. Susan Sarandon will be here Wednesday. Mark Riley is right here with me.
I am?
That's right. Good morning, Riley.
How you doing, man?
We're not going to go out all depressed and morose and maudlin and a bunch of other words that start with M. We're going to try and make this fun.
There you go.
As fun as it can be for, you know, judging by some of the emails I got, some people are brutally depressed about this and are going through some separation anxiety, as am I. And I'm sure Riley is on some degree. Yes, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right. As you know, Riley will be here from 5 to 7 in the morning. So we're not clear exactly what date that's launching, but beginning of January, we'll know tomorrow. Riley's now leaving the room. Changing chairs. And Rachel Maddow, of course, from 7 to 9. But this is Morning Sedition, and this is what we're going to do this week. We're going to be playing some best-of clips. We're going to try and have a good time. I got a lot of... I like having the music on. It's kind of nice. You can take a breather, and something is still happening. We got so many great emails and gifts. Last Friday, someone, Roxy, sent us. Man, we usually get the City Bakery on Friday. She sent us, like, three big packages of Seattle lox from Salmon, and City Bakery set it all up. Thank you, Roxy.
Thank you, Roxy.
Excellent. Today I got a big gift package from a guy out there in San Francisco that guy sent me. Oh my God, man! That dude sent so much stuff, so much stuff. I don't want to. I want to mix up who sent me what here. You know what I mean? But one guy sent me. He sent us like it looks like 20 packages of pistachios and trail mix.
20 packages?
Yeah, Jim Earl's a big fan of the pistachios, so he'll be excited about that. He also sent us a bush toilet paper that we could use in the bathroom because he felt bad for Brendan and the single sheet dispenser, so now we can use this bush toilet paper. Then this cat sent me cigars, books, ideas. He's looking like he's going to...
Yeah, really good cigars, too.
Yeah, take over my career here. You know, the one thing is funny, though, he's talking about a record. This is funny. He's talking about going up on iTunes and putting my stuff on iTunes. And he says, after I wrote this paragraph, I found that the semi-fabulous, not sold out, is already on iTunes. That's my album, my CD. You'd think that if you write me a nice letter, you wouldn't have to put semi-fabulous. You know what I mean? Maybe why not just say, the great CD. You know, you got to throw that in, though. You know, it's semi-fabulous. He sent me all these beautiful cigars, these books, but I'm not going to take that personally. Maybe it was semi-fabulous, Tim. But the best one, not the best one, I don't want to judge. This was great. This guy, this is a friend of ours who loves the show. He's in Japan, and he wrote Mark and Mark, or Pops. I listen to MS every day as I ride along the filth-soaked streets of Osaka. Its genius brings a bloom to the low-frequency stench I must endure as I pedal gaily amongst the shattered automobile detritus and human ordure. In the evenings, when I have the rare chance to stream MS live, its manic dynamics help drown out the future Yakuza revving their two-stroke engines in the streets below. At other times, it provokes my pet Kinkaju? What is that, a dog?
Kinkaju.
To whistle. As a thanks for all the beauty MS has brought to my life, I offer you a fine selection of chocolates and snacks with inappropriate names. Keep the spirit alive from John. And he said, make sure Goliath gets them. But wait. Well, you don't know what these... Look at these names, though, okay? Look at this. Here we got Yell Crunch.
Yell Crunch.
All right? But wait, it gets better, all right? Cream Colon candy. these are real. This is a chocolate bar. Cream Colon is some sort of biscuit with cream in it. You got four kinds of fruit devil.
Fruit devil? Oh, my God.
How about some melty kisses? You want a melty kiss? Wait, here's one. This is killer. Ass.
That's assé.
No, it's ass with an E. How do you know it's assé? Does it look like ass with an E?
I was trying to be nice.
It's chocolate called ass. This one you're not going to believe, Riley.
Well, right? Tell me what this is.
It's a breakfast cereal. Come on.
No,
it says it right there. It says corn frake. It's corn, F-R-A-K-E, corn frake, Choco. But
Do the Japanese have an anti-defamation league, for God's sake?
This came from Japan. It's got the writing on the back of everything. Corn frake, Choco. I ain't making it up, you know what I mean? I ain't making it up. So, Riley, did you have a good weekend, man?
Yeah, I did. It was kind of a nice, restful, go-to-the-gym weekend.
You're doing that. You know, I couldn't be
Not only did I go to the gym, I made my first own smoothie.
That's right. In your entire life?
Well, yeah. But this is like a low-calorie, low-carbo, we actually went out, got berries, strawberries.
You're really doing it.
Yeah.
I'm going the opposite direction, man. I am. What a mistake it was to get my stuff moved a week early. I'm living in depression land. It's just, you know what? Here's what component. I am not. I went to the gym, but I am definitely eating like a compulsive idiot, man. I went out to Bar Petey with some people the other night. That's down on 6th Avenue in Houston. Italian food.
Yeah, yeah.
Went nuts. They do this thing. They make this panna cotta with chocolate sauce that you get at the end. Oh my God. Chocolate mousse. And I'm just wolfing it down. I ate one of the damn cookies that somebody sent us. I got bags of pistachio. I don't know what people are trying to do. Go to LA and hate yourself. Uh-oh. Have a good time. But I went to get a massage. Okay, I went to get a massage. It was given to me by my wife. Riley, it was the opposite. My wife got me a massage, and my mother got me a gentleman's manicure and pedicure. So I had a Russian woman do my nails and feet. That was nice. I tend not to have patience for the spa experience because I'm sitting there. I'm like, can we pick up the speed a little bit? You're supposed to be relaxing. So then I get this, she got me a hot lava rock massage, whatever the hell that means, right? But I'm open to it. I've had one or two good massages in my life. But the guy gives me the massage, it's a guy. My wife says, it's a guy, I thought you need a guy. Yeah, I know what that means. You know, she's like, I thought you might need the strength of a guy. Yeah, I know what that means. All right, no, that means you don't want a girl touching me like that. Because the last time we got a massage together, she swore that the woman who gave me a massage, she was like, the hell with her. She's not very mad at her. But
All wives do that?
Yeah. Not only is this a guy, but do you remember what the bad guy looked like in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? Do you remember the guy that turned out not to be bad at the end? Yeah, he looked kind of like that guy a little bit, right? So I walk in, he's like, hello. And I'm like, hi. And he's got, it's a hot lava rock thing. They actually have hot rocks in boiling water. And you lay down, and he uses these rocks to rub out your muscles. And it seemed interesting, you know. And then
how did it feel?
It felt okay, but I asked the guy, a few minutes in, I said, is there some sort of system this is based on? I mean, is there a plan here? He's like, not really. You think that there was, he says, I think there was originally a plan. It was okay. I had a nice time. The rocks felt good. It did. But, I gotta be honest with you. All right, so he's doing my neck, and they drive this rock into your neck, and he's standing right over me. And I've been really sensitive to smells lately. But, there's something that'll screw you up, your zen up when you kind of, smell the guy who's massaging his lunch coming out of his nose onto your face. That was just a real problem, I'm sitting there going, oh, that feels kind of good. What is that, onions? How come I'm getting the smell
garlic
of that?
Nuts.
Right, exactly. And but I didn't want to say anything. I tipped him anyways. And maybe, I don't know if he's listening or nothing, but he'd know who he was. I would say, go with some gum, some Clorets, something, maybe a little scope in between, the lunch and the touching.
A Cepacol.
And I'm sitting there in the relaxation room with, it's me and seven women.
Whoa!
In bathrobes, just kind of hanging out. Felt a little awkward, but it was okay. No one talked to anybody.
Oh, by the way, before we go to break, we got good news.
We do?
Guess who finished number two in the box office sweepstakes? We'll talk about this with David Poland later.
Brokeback Mountain?
No.
Oh.
Syriana.
Did it?
Yes.
So that's a big weekend.
Syriana did over $12 million worth of business this weekend.
So let's see if it keeps it up. That's all right, man. That's all right. So Bob Baer's going to be doing okay, and our buddy
Stephen Gagan.
Stephen Gagan, who settled in once we started.
Who had lunch, apparently, down in D.C. the other day and got some confessions about the Iraqi war. It was very interesting.
What do you mean? Well, you can fill us in a minute?
Yeah.
All right. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio's. Wait a second. It's also, I do want to announce and... the passing of Richard Pryor, which we were planning on doing next 7, but I want to make sure that no one thinks we're missing that. We're going to play some of his bits throughout the show, and we'll talk about him when we come back. 16 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Dateline, New York, the city we built on rock and roll. Hi, kids. This is your War on Brains correspondent, Mort Milvington, reminding you to always stay informed. And when you can't do that, try listening to Morning Sedition every morning here on Air America Radio, your Xanadu, now with Splenda.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous Latin Casino proudly presents the star of our show, Mr. Richard Pryor.
We are gathered here today on this sorrowful occasion to say goodbye to the dearly departed. He was dearly, and he has departed. Thus, that's why we call him the dearly departed. In other words, the nigga dead. As you can see him laying here, I've been here 3 days, the boy ain't moved a muscle. So I know the nigga dead. And it seemed that death was quite a surprise to his ass. Didn't think you was ever gonna die, did you, nigga?
22 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Listening to Richard Pryor. You know, Richard has been sick for years now, and I saw him. Wow. I saw him alive at the Comedy Store before he got sick, when he was trying to put together a special, and it was one of the most amazing thrills of my life as a comic, because the first time I got hip to Richard Pryor, I guess I was probably 14 or 15 years old. I went to see the Richard Pryor movie, the first Richard Pryor movie, with my buddy Dave Bishop, and I never laughed so much in my life. And since then, if anyone ever asked me who I think the best comedian ever was, it's always Pryor. It's a short list with me in terms of the major guys. But he's at the top of it every time, and I love telling that to people. Like people like that was a weird sweat. My mom's boyfriend. You hate when you say your wife and you're talking about your mom. But my mom's boyfriend, it's interesting. Guys who like older generation guys, Jewish guys or whatever, who don't know about him. You say that Richard Pryor's your favorite, and they just look at you like they don't quite get it because they don't know how deep the guy was and how real he was. It was great. What was your first experience with him, Riley?
Well, you know, I saw him on TV.
Yeah.
When he had a relatively short-lived show.
I saw that. I went to Museum Broadcasting and watched it.
Yeah, I saw it when it came out. And the thing that really struck me about Richard Pryor was that he, on a certain level, was able to turn from hilariously funny comedy to biting social satire almost on a dime.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that may have been a part of the reason why the variety show that he did didn't last all that long, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but see, rode the edge, man,
yeah,
for sure.
But see, the other thing was that Richard Pryor was probably one of the last of these guys in the tradition of Red Fox and others who had a large body of work on record albums.
Oh, yeah.
You know, comedy albums.
Way
the kind
back,
that
yeah.
You, yeah, the kind that your parents would keep, like, in the back of the collection to make sure you didn't get a hold of.
The party records.
Yeah. But see, the thing about Richard Pryor, too, was he allowed black people to laugh uproariously about things pertaining to race. And that wasn't something that was done prior to... I mean, it's common now. I mean, you got literally dozens of comics who do it
but
now.
But he crossed the black and white line, and he made it funny to everybody.
He made it funny to everybody, but he also... really opened the gates for black comics to talk about race in ways that no one had done before.
And that's what's amazing about him is that he started out pretty much a straight-ahead sort of sweater comic, sort of a guy that was doing Cosby Light that had some success. He'd go on Sullivan, and he had a career going as a non-confrontational black comedian who was not doing anything about race or really not that much social commentary. And at some point, he decided he went out to California. He took some time off, and he sort of snapped and created this angry character and decided to go full on. He started listening to the Lenny Bruce records. I swear to God that, you know, Lenny Bruce was the guy that was able to call the culture, call society on its hypocrisy, and he paid a price for it. He really pushed the envelope in terms of hypocrisy, but he created a language for comedy that if people had the guts to take up the template that Lenny Bruce created, they could actually facilitate some social change. And I believe that Richard Pryor, you know, did a crash course in Lenny Bruce. Because I swear, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, that the first couple of angry Richard Pryor records, it would be super. I'm going to have to double check which ones they are, but I believe that you can hear cadences of Lenny Bruce in there. I believe that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anybody will agree with me, but it's like if you watch the evolution of his career as he really developed his own voice, there is so much heart there. This guy, you know, when you watch him. There's no distance between what he's saying and what he's feeling, and that's an amazing thing in a comic, that you cannot deny him the humanity. He's not just talking about foibles. He's living through the humanity with you as he performed, and it was overwhelming.
Yeah, it was, and the thing is, he, and certainly in the black community, was able to bridge age gaps that very few other comedians were able to. You know, Cosby appealed to an older black audience. Pryor appealed to everybody in the black community, and certainly in the white community as well, but he broke such ground between his stand-up routines, his albums, and the films that he was in. 1977's Which Way Is Up, which was savaged, by the way, when it first came out, but later became a cult film. Pryor played three different roles in that film, and all of them were absolutely hilarious.
And he set a standard. You know, black comics from Pryor forward have the specter of Pryor hanging over them.
Oh, yeah.
I have seen Pryor's bits done so many times by so many different people, to the point, and what's really interesting is what a lot of black comics do is they lift Pryor's white guy voice.
Yeah.
That you would think that if you watch almost any black comic, that the only way to capture or to act talk like a white guy would be to do the, well, hello, sir. You know, which Pryor, I think, coined.
He started that.
He really did. All right, so let's get on with this. We'll talk more about Richard Pryor later. I'll share some more sound bites and some more reflections on that. I'll tell you about that time that I met him. And, well, we're going to do a tribute to Brian from Everett next.
Uh-oh.
So stay tuned for that 27 Past Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Another great moment in morning.
What happened there? That was interesting. 34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're reminiscing. We're moving through the past and into the future, my friends. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's the last week here, but we're not going to be maudlin. We're not going to be morose. We're not going to be sad. Though we do have feelings. I definitely have a certain amount of separation anxiety, that's for sure. And there's a darkness in front of me that I do not like. But we'll move through this, folks. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Okay. From the Minneapolis Star Tribune poll, consumers optimistic about economy. Poll, consumers optimistic about economy. Translation. Most expect economic collapse before credit card bill is due. All right. How about this one? Americans desperate to be optimistic about something. From Reuters, cancer drug may help short boys be taller. Cancer drug may help short boys be taller. Translation, college recruiter caught with 50 cases of new cancer drug. From the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Christian stores capitalize on Narnia. Christian stores Capitalize on Narnia translation. Jeez is now available in cuddly lion form. Hey, I forgot to mention. I did. You know, another reason why I'm down outside of the morning sedition transition out of the world. This is, you know what? I hope somebody makes a box set of the damn stuff we did here. I hope somebody does. We, you know, we've been so busy churning away in the night, just trying to keep this show together, that no one's really had time to really amass all the brilliant, amazing comedy and moments that we've had on this show into some sort of a sellable entity. Because apparently, I was under the impression that making money was important to Air America, but apparently they just didn't see it, was, fit for making money off of that. But despite whether that's the case, I just like it to be out there, because it feels to me that once I walk away from this thing, where's all that stuff going to be? I know a lot of people have podcasted it, and a lot of people have downloaded some of this stuff, and a lot of it's available, but it'd be nice if it was in some package with, you know, Kent Jones and Bruce Cherry and Jim Earl and Mike Ferrucci, Tom Johnson. Am I forgetting somebody? All the fellas.
Did you say Bruce Cherry?
Yeah, I did say Bruce Cherry. Barry Lank and Conniff. Frank Conniff, who used to be here, he used to do some stuff for us. Man, it's been quite a bunch of great writers. But, you know, we also have had, here's what I was going to get at. This is why I'm sad. I gave a hissy away. I gave one of the cats away. I had two cats. It was too cold to ship them cargo. I found a good home for Hissy. I put the word out there here on the air. And it was like Sophie's Choice, man. It's like, you know, who's going to... But I had to keep LaFonda because she's going back to California. So this woman, Vicky, who is a big fan of the show, drove down from Rockland County to pick up Hissy, was completely torn up about what's going on with Morning Sedition, and completely thrilled to take Hissy with her back up to Rockland County, where she's got about five other cats. She loves the ferals. She does some volunteer work at a shelter. She also works during the week at a hospice. A really big-hearted, good-hearted woman. It was very nice to meet her. I'm very grateful that Hissy is now in a group home for cats where she'll be treated well. And Fonda, right when the other two cats are out of the way, my new best friend, sleeping on the bed, talking to me. Unbelievable the change this cat went through. So here's another guy. This is not, this is a comedy. And Brian from Everett, by the way, has said he has promised he will have a song for the end of Morning Sedition. I hope you get that to us by the end of the week, Brian. This is a guy we built a relationship with up there. He's a sort of a bipolar insomniac who enjoys the drink. But he's always been very honest, and here's a little tribute to Brian from Everett.
And now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Now, last week on the show, Riley.
Yes.
We got a call from our buddy, this guy Brian, who lives up in Washington. He's been listening to the show for since the beginning, practically. Yep. He leaves messages frequently. He calls the show frequently. And we brought him up in conversation on the show last week. Chris, this is a guy named Brian up there in Everett, Washington, who's a frequent caller to the show, but sometimes a little over the top. You know, he spends a lot of time awake. We're assuming that he has an inconsistent mental disposition, but a good guy. And
inconsistent mental disposition.
I'm being diplomatic, man.
Okay.
See, that was last week. Okay, yeah. I said that Brian's got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now, we get a series of messages, Riley. Now, you have to understand, our answering machine here at work, for some reason, it does cut people off fairly quickly and inconsistently.
Yeah.
But we got a series of messages. Let's hear the first one first, Chris.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
You got a song.
How's that gonna look in the deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Clear my name.
Next message.
Okay. So that's one. All right. But like that wasn't enough. He really, really wanted to get this song out there.
Yeah.
That he riffed off of my description of him. And here's a series of phone messages of Brian in Washington trying to get his song across.
Now I may have some strange religious views. I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. And Jesus may have...
Next message.
Hey, Johnny, this phone system is screwing me up by hanging me up before I get a chance to punch it in. Listen to my song. Now I may have some strange religious views.
Next message.
Al Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh as a troubling.
Next message.
And if whoever f***ing with this phone system can f*** themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste. You know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touchtone pad. So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an instant system, mental disposition.
Next message.
I'm trying to form a song here.
Oh, no.
And I can't have the phone people or whoever's in charge of punching my buttons, you know, needs to get, you know, some needs to get some cancer, you know, needs to find their own disease in their own mind, you know, and how happy they really are with their life and how content they are and how they're going to look to the sky when they die, you know, or are they going to be in hell? I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
Oh, man.
Now, how's that going to look?
Next message.
Is that all of them?
That's it.
Brian, are you on the phone?
Am I here?
Yeah.
Hey.
What? Hey, what? We want to
hear a song, man?
I want to hear the whole song, Brian.
I'm not your monkey, man.
Come on, dude.
Come on, Brian. We've been waiting for this.
Hey, listen, I'm going to do a professional recording and send you a tape. How's that sound?
No, just give us a few. Give us at least one whole verse, Brian. Come on, I know you're not my monkey, but we're all enjoying it here.
Yeah, man.
I wanted to tell you, since I've got this newfound fame, I'm going to embark on a political career, I think, just to leap off from this show.
Yeah, I think this is the beginning for you, bro.
Yeah, I have a new political party. It's called the Anti-Social Socialist Party.
That sounds good. Is it just you in it?
My slogan is, do I have to leave the house?
Oh, no. I'll vote for you, Brian.
Hey, what happened to that Fast? You remember the Fast song you played about Al Franken?
It was going to end up like this. Al Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken, King of the Jews.
Thank you, Brian. You've made our morning.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
You know, I met Brian when I went up to perform in Seattle.
Yeah, I remember you told me.
Nice enough guy. He gave me an actual Memorex cassette of other stuff he did on radio. I remember we were sort of disturbed to find that he called frequently to a Seattle morning show up there, which I think they've gone off the air, haven't they, those two?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what Brendan said. But look, there's one more song by Brian. This was a little off point. It was not a political song, but nonetheless, a bit of brilliance from Brian and Everett. Now apparently he's on the phone.
What's up, buddy?
What's up, Brian? How you
Good
doing?
Good morning, Everett. It's 3:53 a.m.
How you feeling? You're up, huh?
Oh, I'm up, man. Boy, you know, I tell you what, I'm going to work today. You know, I work at the daily paid places.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah, that's vague, but I understand.
Now, here, I'm going to be going to this job. And okay. I got to scrounge up some cash.
Yeah.
So I wrote this song to get myself worked up to go to work because I need some cat food.
Okay, all right.
I need to get some cat food today.
So this is a song that's going to propel you to get cat food.
And also get my VCR out of the pawn shop.
And get your VCR out of the pawn shop. Let's hear it.
Okay, here we go. Should I go to work today, or should I give it a pass? Should I take my sensitive alien brain to the United States of Ass? It'll be 8 hours of labor for just about 50 bones, but I've got to power through it and conjure up the stones to endure the rogues and felons who will drink and fight at a bar so I can see some melons when I get my VCR out of the pawn shop. 'Cause it's one-stop shopping for me. 'Cause it's amateur night at the compound, and the seeds will be popping for me. Now when I go
back to work.
Yeah.
I'll leave my lovin' at home, and I'll be disgusted by the needle freaks who party in the Thunderdome. I may sound like a hypocrite, but I know what's good for me. And I believe in reproductive freedom, and I can see what I choose to see. Now you may call me a loser, and you may call me a jerk, but neither Dr. Dobson nor Janine Garofalo can get my Jimmy to work. So it's back to the pawn shop, 'cause it's one-stop shopping for me. 'Cause it's amateur night at the compound, and tomorrow will be laundry day for me.
Yeah. That was a good one, Brian. That was a lot of work, and it had a couple of verses.
So that's $20 you owe me now.
Okay.
But I decided I'm going to donate. What happened to your charity, by the way? The camp? Was it the galvanizing traumas of the moonlight hazings? Is that why they were under investigation?
One of these days we're going to have to do a thorough, in-depth interview with you, Brian.
Because I've taken a vow of poverty.
Okay.
Because I'm unemployed.
Right, well,
it's handy. It's a good way to look at it.
Well, thank you for calling with the song.
You're so welcome, and keep up the good work. And again, pray for the Maronites over in Lebanon there.
Okay, and I hope you get your VCR working.
And all that.
Okay, take it easy, Brian.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Wow, Riley.
That's deep.
You remember that back in the day?
Yeah, I do.
Boy, Brian really turned out to be quite a character. He started off as this, we thought he was just a whack job. He used to leave messages on our machine, and then he became this very big, bigger-than-life sort of contributor.
Talented whack
job.
Yeah,
so we're also, when we come back, we're going to reflect a little bit on the defining moment of what really set Morning Sedition apart from the rest of this network, that's for sure, in a good way. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition 47 Pass.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
All right, 52 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, my friends. So what are we doing? I know what we're doing. We're talking about job listing. We're going to talk a little bit. We're going to share with you the defining moment of Morning Sedition. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about Syriana with David Poland a little later. That's doing well at the box office. I'd like to think we had something to do with that. Can we? I'd like to think that we have something to do with the president feeling isolated and detached from everything, from reality, that he's slowly fading into the darkness of his own administration. I'd like to take some responsibility for that. I'd also like to play this from last week. There's a job listing we usually do. We decide this one was very appropriate and still held true. Okay, well, it's 53 past. We're playing an older clip, not just doing a new job listing. All right, here we go. We know things are tough in the job market right now, so we've decided to help out. I just happened to be scanning the want ads, and this posting caught my attention for our Morning Sedition Tuesday job listing. All right, here we go. Morning talk show host. Hey, what a coincidence. I might be in the market for that kind of job soon. Let's see what it says. Left-leaning talk radio network seeks a new host for morning drive time show. Wow, that's exactly what I do. Maybe I should contact these people. Our ideal host will be non-threatening and non-judgmental. Uh-oh. Now these people sound like total idiots. All right. We're looking for someone who can present pre-written pieces without making snide editorial comments. Yeah, wow, it sounds like you're looking for a trained chimp, buddy. All right. Must be able to deal with typographic errors on the fly. On the fly? What the hell is the fly? What does that mean? We need a host who can conduct a show with dignity and maturity. Well, I got one thing to say about that. Most importantly, we are looking for someone with an acute awareness of what is going on, an ability to immediately clue in. In short, someone who can take a hint. Well, wow, that's me to a T. Now I'm intrigued again. Paranoid over analytical ties need not apply. Hey, they're talking about me. Or they just want me to think that. What the hell's going on here? One more important qualification. The ideal candidate won't be you, Mark. All right. Well, that seals it. I'm applying. All right, that was from a couple of weeks ago. Thanks, Chris. Hey, Kayla, I know, man, you're feeling under the weather. I'm sorry, buddy. You okay? You okay in there?
I'm
fine,
bud.
What do you got, the cold?
Who knows?
Oh, really? Just one of those things?
Yeah, AIDS, maybe.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. What do we go right to that for? Can't you just have a cold? Because the honey's not going to help AIDS.
That yeah, I gave sure
you.
Isn't.
I gave you some honey. You got some tea. You're all set. Well, actually, it would help. You know, anything that makes you comfortable is going to make you feel better. So let's get on with this. Eugene McCarthy, the modern original anti-war candidate, Minnesota Senator Eugene McCarthy, died at 89 years old. I guess that was on Saturday as
that
well.
That was on Saturday, yes.
Richard Pryor was 65. Eugene McCarthy was 89. He was the leader of the Democratic revolt against the Vietnam War, which I guess facilitated or pressed Lyndon B. Johnson to pull the troops out.
Well, it also pressured Lyndon Johnson to pull out of the race that year.
Oh, yeah?
Lyndon Johnson was running for re-election in 1968 until Gene McCarthy actually had some victories early on in some of the primaries. And he drew, by the way, and inspired a generation of students who were the backbone of his volunteers when he was making the run. He beat Bobby Kennedy in a couple of states during the course of the primaries, including, by the way, Oregon.
Mm.
And then, the wind kind of got let out of his sails after Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Kennedy beat him in California, and then he was assassinated. And then Gene McCarthy ended up being a bit of a spoiler. Hubert Humphrey, of course, won the nomination that year, but lost in the general election. Some people blame McCarthy for that. But if you want to talk about a guy who stood up, by the way, he was raised a Roman Catholic, flirted with a monastery.
No kidding.
For a period of time, yeah.
And he was also an intellectual guy, which is not something you see in too many candidates anymore.
No,
that there was a time in the late 60s, early 70s, where it wasn't a cultural shame to actually go deep when you talked about things and explore things a little deeper than people might be used to hearing. It was actually an impressive trait as opposed to one that has been demonized culturally in the climate we live in now. I don't know a lot about him, but it sounds to me like we could use somebody like him today. In the Senate. We will be talking to Barbara Boxer later in the show, and I want people to note this because we reach out to senators all the time. We've had a few on the show, on the phone, but Barbara Boxer is the first senator to ever come into our studio to talk to us. And you know why? Because she's selling a book. And, the bottom line is we've tried to facilitate some sort of platform for a lot of these senators to talk. I talked to her once on Randy's show. I'm not taking anything away from her, but there is something sort of interesting. I have pressing questions to ask her about politics, but we got to talk about a novel. It's 57 Fast, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Okay. Good morning, geniuses, philosophy, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. My friends, these are the last days of Morning Sedition, which has been a bold experiment that did not go unappreciated by the thousands of people who got it. Well, friends, we're not going to disappoint you. This week will be a bash of great guests, clips from the past, and bittersweet reverie. We got four more shows, not including this one. There's a fifth show down. We got Barbara Boxer today, Jim Walcott, David Poland, Mark Riley's here.
Hey.
We're going to go out with a certain sense of dignity and celebration. I want to reach out to my friends on the blog. I just got an email message from Travis who was like, come on, dude. We've been here since the beginning, too, in one form or another. I've had a contentious and loving relationship with the bloggers. It used to be kind of crazy. Not so much anymore. I'm glad you guys are out there having a good time. A lot of original support came from the blog. Mara and Melanie and Fish Guy and the crew. I don't want to leave anybody out, but a lot of people, I'm not sure who's there right now, but I certainly want to thank you. And Riley, I think the real decisive moment for us on this show, the real turnaround for me, anyways, I think the turnaround for both of us, when the show became what it was supposed to become was 2 days after Reagan died. Reagan died on a Saturday,
yeah.
And we got the directive on Monday that the network was going soft. The network was like, we got to be respectful. We got to treat this guy like a president. And I was like, what, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that worked.
Who the hell liked it? What, we're going to treat Reagan with respect? That's ridiculous. And we actually, there was that moment, we had that discussion when Larson was here, was like, well, if you guys are going to make this decision, we're going against network policy. I'm like, well, this is what this show is supposed to be, so let's do it. Let's speak our mind and let's take this guy to task. Who cares if he's dead? So here's some clips from that day.
And now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Good morning. It's Dead Reagan Monday here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. He armed the Iranians in exchange for the hostages in order to solidify his, you know, his presidency, his election, mm-hmm. which was dirty, low-down, covert op BS, right? And also set the world on course for some of the stuff we're paying for now. He then armed the Iraqis to fight the Iranians, who he secretly armed. He sent Donald Rumsfeld there in 1983 yeah. to smooth over everything and say, like, you know, how you doing, buddy? We're here.
My yeah, man.
My man, right?
Yeah.
And that sort of led to, you know, a lot of this situation. And, of course, Saddam became our enemy, no longer our business partner. And over a period of time, you know, many of the missiles and many of the arms that are being fired at Americans right now are from that original, you know, Reagan stash.
Well, you know, we ought to, as we hit on these various and sundry things, the emailer hit on something that is crucially, crucially important. Ronald Reagan, at a time when he could have done so much more to fight what was becoming an epidemic of acquired immune deficiency syndrome, AIDS, he did little or nothing. And there are those who will argue that many, many people died because of the inactivity of the federal government during the time when AIDS became, I guess, made the transition from a disease to a pandemic.
Well, that, you know, this became, you know, sort of, we have to talk about Rumsfeld a little bit, but this became
oh, yes.
the pandemic that it is. But, you know, this was a policy that Reagan, you know, really was the first guy to really make it okay politically to blame the victim.
Yes.
You know, that, you know, it was the moral transgressions of the people with AIDS that gave them AIDS. It was the poor's fault that they were poor. You know, it was on and on with this. So, you know, and this is a guy that, you know, even though he, you know, people think he was such a great president. I mean, his average approval rating over the course of his presidency was 52%. That's worse than Clinton. It's worse than the first Bush. It's worse than Johnson, Kennedy, Eisenhower.
Eisenhower?
Yeah. Mike in Long Island. How are you, Mike?
Two things. First, I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for providing some balance to the deification of Ronald Reagan. I think the statistics that you went over were accurate and sobering, and basically that's the way I remember the Reagan years. And the second thing is, I think that there was somebody else besides Mark Riley who didn't realize that Reagan had a black Secretary of Housing. Reagan didn't realize it. There's a famous incident where they were at a housing, a conference of city mayors, and
yeah.
Reagan referred to Sam Pierce as mayor. How
yes.
is your city going, Mr. Mayor?
Mayor, yeah, you're right.
They are not giving any alternative viewpoints except for this fluff.
Yeah.
About Reagan. Yeah, I know the guy's still warm.
Uh-huh.
You know, I get that. But still, there should be some criticism.
He's dead.
Yeah.
He's dead. That's all I could say.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, forgive me for even, you know, being insensitive on that part, but, you know, I just find
you're
it
forgiven.
Despicable. You know, and he was a bigot. I mean, I heard you mention that earlier on about his position with the ANC some years ago. It was
definitely a bigot.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, 12 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. You know, that was the first day, Mark, that we did the show by ourselves.
That was the first
time. It was the first time. It was one of those weird windows of opportunity. Now, I don't want to begrudge Sue Ellicott anything. The bottom line is, many of you have been listening since day one, know that the three of us was not a match made in heaven. The chemistry was not quite right. And that day, I saw the window, and me and Riley just locked down and did the business. And it was, we had that moment where we're like, well, this is really what the show is. This is what it feels like it should be. This is where it needs to go. And as time moved on, other people believe that as well. So, look, if you think about it, it seems to me that's what the whole network should have been about, really, was that day. I know that I remember Franken handled it very diplomatically and even unfiltered at that time, you know, sort of went by network policy to treat it with kid gloves. And it was just like, forget about it. Is it kid gloves? Kid gloves. Is that a type of, what does that mean?
I don't know what that means.
I wrote strong suit in an email yesterday. I said it's not my strong suit. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea where that come from or what it means or whether it was one word or two words. And
I thought it was from cards.
Was it strong suit? Okay, well, maybe that see, it's interesting how many of those things that we use, because we know what they mean, but we don't know where they come from.
Where they come from, yeah.
Maybe it isn't interesting, but I think it was, because I was sitting there wondering if it was one word or not. So let's talk about this for a minute. Let's talk about where the Tukey Williams situation is at now. The state of California, the California Supreme Court, refused to grant a stay of execution. That means, Riley, if I'm not mistaken, that he's going to be killed tomorrow unless Schwarzenegger does something.
Yeah, exactly. This was the last opportunity for someone other than Schwarzenegger to decide Tukey Williams' fate. The California Supreme Court, late last night actually, refused to grant that stay. That means that Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision, which a lot of people thought he would have made on Friday, now he's bumping it directly up against the execution date, and there are people that are upset about that. I still, in my heart of hearts, don't think that this man is going to grant Tukey Williams clemency. I think he should, because I don't think anybody should be executed. But that's just me.
Right. The guy's a criminal. The guy is a convicted murderer. He's going to spend his life in prison. But in some respects, if you're against the death penalty no matter what, then he shouldn't be killed. In another respect, if you have second thoughts about the death penalty and you realize that this guy has done some good, has been rehabilitated to a point not to where he'll ever get out of prison, but at least is contributing to society and trying to teach kids not to join gangs and to educate young people through children's books. I mean, that's something. Look, you know, we are going to be on the air for another few days. We're going to be on the air through Friday. We're going to be revisiting a lot of the past. But I was listening to that show, and I can't say that I'm any sort of radio professional, but I was certainly in my youth then. That was in June. That was over a year ago. We've been on the air 20 months, and I don't like to toot my own horn, but I think I've improved a little bit since then.
Oh, yeah. there's no doubt.
I know I have my moments with the you knows, but boy, that was ridiculous. You know, I was doing it at Springer level, my friends.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Jerry Springer's the king of you know, by the way. I used to get criticized for saying you know as a pauser, but then you listen to Jerry, and he'll do it. He'll you know it up. And I don't know if anyone says that to him. I wonder if Jerry's getting those emails. Remember he said he'd be upset with those emails, sort of like, you know, why do you keep saying, you know, and people correcting my grammar? And then I realized, look, it's poetic license, but I did try to check it. And on good days, I got it in check. So when we come back, we're going to have the morning remembrance. Jim Walcott's coming up. Barbara Boxer's going to be here. We're going to talk to David Poland about movies later in the week. On Wednesday, we're going to have Susan Sarandon. We're going to have a good time as we count down the day. 16 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We should probably get right into this. Unfortunately, my friends, not unfortunately, Jim Walcott's going to be here in a few minutes. But right now, unfortunately, it's that time of weekend again when we hear that. Woo! Unfortunately, it's that time of week again when we hear Morning Sedition. Take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Oh. Bad one, huh?
No, actually a great weekend.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, a lot of sleeping pills.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Riley, you're so close to me. This is the first time you've been this close to me in over a year.
I don't know what's up
with
you.
It's over a week, man.
I don't know what's up with you guys.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, Mort.
Helen Murphy, mm-hmm. White House gift shop manager. Helen Murphy, who for over a generation managed the gift shop in the East Wing of the White House, has died of frustration after failing to unload 12 crates of William Howard Taft scented candles.
Taft scented candles.
He's a big fat guy. Scented candles just would be really...
It's funny.
Out of character with him. Although Murphy recalled how thrilling it was to meet every president from Nixon through Clinton, she was perhaps most impressed with the time she met President Nancy Reagan. Retiring from the gift shop before the 2000 election, Murphy regretted never seeing any of the newer products, like the George W. Bush snow globe full of actual cocaine powder, the Bill of Rights doormat, and the Lynn Cheney, my daughter's not a lesbian, flannel shirt and mullet wig.
You all right?
Yeah.
You want to blow your nose?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
I thought
here.
You never asked.
Here's a Kleenex.
Thank you.
You think you got a cold or something?
I got that new bird flu.
Yeah, a lot of people have that. Good luck with that.
Thank you. Yeah. Friends say during slow days at the shop, Murphy would often enjoy reading, solving crossword puzzles, and watching Richard Nixon carry on drunken conversations with the Lincoln poster. Murphy requested her body be stamped with the presidential seal and made into a tote bag.
Oh, wow. That's a one-of-a-kind item, I'm thinking.
Man, I'm going to kill you. William G. Speed, migraine expert.
Yeah.
William G. Speed, who for the last 60 years was considered the world's expert on migraine headaches, has died after a lifetime of being a chronic pain in the ass. Born in Baltimore, Speed knew from the time he was 8 that he wanted to become a doctor, mainly because that might get him out of Baltimore. While student at Trinity College, Speed first became interested in migraines after meeting countless women who used them as an excuse for not having sex with him. As his reputation grew, Dr. Speed became a founding member of the American Headache Society, or...
That would be AHS, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. It's good. That's one of those things that probably worked on paper a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know. Here to get a good day gone tomorrow. Six of one, half dozen of the other.
You got it.
Today, migraines are defined as severe headaches, often accompanied by nausea and vomiting. Three symptoms usually associated with watching the latest Steve Martin movie.
Yeah.
The deceased requested his body be placed under a hot shower, then a cold one, then a hot one, then a cold one, then a hot one, and then just left alone for a while, damn it.
Oh, Jim. Mort.
This
Jim
has been Mort. This week's Morning Remembrance. And until... Well, never. Never.
Brutal.
This is Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
Mort. Well, maybe we'll make it happen again. I'm still waiting to hear what the hell's going on with that L.A. show. But, you know,
I know. I hear they're going to give you a budget of like $50,000.
Yeah, big show. Yeah, so that'll be good. That'll get us pencils and... maybe I'll be able to pay my mortgage for a couple months and throw you a bone. Maybe, and then
if I get a shirt, I'm satisfied.
Yeah, well, I might be able to get you a shirt. That's what we'll do. We'll spend the money on printing shirts on publicity things, and then we won't have anything else. But look, Jim, I just wanted to tell you, a guy, Randall, out there in Portland, Oregon, sent on the desk in our off in the Morning Sedition office. Really? There's literally 20 bags of pistachios. And I know how much
I love pistachios.
Yeah,
I know you do. And there's like there's a ton of them in there. You should go do it. And here's another question. Do you know that I didn't realize this, but you're from San Francisco.
Yeah.
The Dykes on Bikes, which is the lead attraction of the San Francisco Gay Pride Parade for years, have just won their fight to trademark the title. Dykes on Bikes. And here's another weird thing. Did you know the reason they couldn't trademark it was because the U.S. Patent Office thought that dyke was derogatory? But apparently the National Center for Lesbian Rights said the word dyke is no longer derogatory. Within the lesbian community, it has been reclaimed, and they say it's a title of pride and empowerment. Does that mean we can use it?
Yeah, we can say things like dumb dykes and everything. We can, come on, it's not... The patent office says it's okay. Hey, you dumb dykes. Good luck with that. Crap, whatever you're doing on the bikes.
Like you don't know.
Stupid dykes on bikes. Hail dykes.
Best see that, the hail dykes. But, you know, the dumb dykes kind of makes it derogatory. But I wouldn't
say you're right.
But if you said, that's the hottest dyke I've ever seen, would that be...
That'd be okay.
I don't, you know, it's unclear when these things have been sanctioned by anybody.
Uh-oh.
When something is politically correct, yet the lesbian community is okay with it, does that mean that we can use it as, now, this was not a good example, but can I use it as an endearing term? Like, she's a very powerful dyke speaker.
I think you can. I think that's all right.
I don't know.
Well, if you have any problems, just give him Jim Earl's number.
27 past, Air America Radio. We got Jim Walcott coming up. Stay with us.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Stepson.
Hi, Sammy.
Hi, Mark.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Look, before we start, I think we should read an email complaint one of our listeners sent concerning you, Sammy.
All right, give me your best shot, Slick. Bring it on. It's go time.
Okay, here we go. It reads... Quote, I am a librarian and I'm all about freedom of speech, but to give you a little feedback, the Sammy the Stem Cell bits are worse than offensive. They're just not that funny. They're just really adolescent. I feel embarrassed for you when I hear them. Not funny. Signed, Dina M. You have an answer for that, Sammy?
Yeah. Try looking up my response in the I don't give a crap section of your local library.
Oh, no.
Adolescent, my ass. This is outrageous. I have a degree in art history, you know.
I didn't know that. You don't think that she has a valid point, though, Sammy?
No, look, you kale munching hippie.
Oh, man. Come on.
It's obvious this chick hates my freedom.
Oh, no.
But worst of all, Mark, she hates life.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I'm a unique, living, integrated human person. Don't forget that, you dumb heap.
Hey. I don't think it has anything to do with her hating freedom, Sammy. She has a right to... Wait a minute. Did you just call me a dumb heeb?
No, that was Kalo.
No, you're a monster, man. A monster.
And you're welcome, Shylock.
Hey, wait a minute. Jeez, you are so disgusting. What is your problem? What the hell makes you tick?
I don't know. You know what? It's a long story, Mark, but maybe I can say it in a song.
Okay.
I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. I hope you never get well. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Hey, Mark.
What?
Go to hell.
Oh,
I'm Sacred Life. I did your wife.
Oh, no.
I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Dum dee dum dee doo. I'm Sammy the Stem Cell. Hey, Mark.
What?
You! Everybody! I'm Sacred Life! I did your wife! I'm Sammy the Stem Cell! Doodly-dum-dee-doo!
Doodly-dum-dee-doo!
Hey, shut up, Riley!
Hey! I never liked you!
So you think that...
That makes two of us.
Oh, boy. So you think that Congress is going to vote to fund more stem cell research here, Sammy?
Well, that's a good question, Mark.
Uh-huh.
So far, the bill has broad bipartisan support in the Senate, and they could vote it on it by next month. However, all indicators point to a veto by President Bush. It's an important story, and I'll keep you posted on it.
Wow, Sammy, that was sincere, straightforward, and completely devoid of vulgarity or insults. I'm proud of you, man.
exactly the kind of crap I'd expect from a freak bag like you.
You know, you make me hate all stem cells.
Yeah.
Why don't you just leave, my friend?
Read my mind, a-hole. So long, Diphthong.
All right, we'll see
you. I left 5 minutes ago.
You're the worst.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Classic. It was classic Morning Sedition. 37 past the hour. It is Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
I'm telling you, where's that box set? They should get it together here and then create the cult classic box set of Morning Sedition favorites. That's what they should do.
If people knew how we came up with that stuff, too.
I know.
I was just sitting in a studio one day and Jim did a goofy voice. We said, why don't you do that as a bit?
And then we decided to make him angry and completely misanthropic.
Well, just because anything sounds funny coming out of that voice.
Yeah, it really caught on. I'm sad is that some of the other characters that were just starting out aren't going to find their way into the ether like Angus McFarker. He's only in for about four now.
I think he'll do all right by himself, though. He's got a career ahead of him.
Here we go. What were some of the highlights of this past year in politics? Our next guest is a contributing editor of Vanity Fair, and he's recently put together Vanity Fair's Best of the Best 2005 for the January issue. He's the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, The Looting of the News in a Time of Terror, and he's been a great friend of the show. James Wolcott joins us live in the studio this morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Hey, Jim.
So you got the big list going. It's one of those big end-of-the-year lists.
Yeah.
And you want to do a countdown with us? What's towards the bottom of the list in terms of big moments?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, the thing is, this is a year that was almost bottomless in just the low points.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, if you get to the... Because the thing is, I mean, one of the big, you know, lows has to be not just Katrina, but how... Essentially, New Orleans has been abandoned now.
The response, yes.
You know, it's like, oh, there was that 1 week of like, we're going to do so much, we're going to raise the city back. And now it's like, well, the Congress is on other things.
It's interesting. We got a directive from the network actually saying that we were back on the air in New Orleans and yes. that we should reach out because New Orleans has been abandoned and that they're still in very big trouble down there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then another ongoing low, of course, with Iraq, but also the whole torture, the fact that we're actually debating torture, the fact that we've now got, you know, magazines of the right, you know, putting up their defenses of torture.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The Charles Krauthammer.
Cheney fighting for a CIA operative's right to torture as effectively mm-hmm. as necessary, but it's a special cadre of people that can do it. The rest can't.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is they'll find so many exemptions that basically anybody they want to exempt from being prosecuted, they'll exempt. You know, so it's been a strange. I ran into someone the other day at a party, and they said, you know, my problem with Christmas this year is I just want the whole year to be over. You know,
you and Bush both.
Yeah, Bush both. But it's like it was not a very satisfying, but there were some highlights. I mean, there were some like positive things that came out of the year.
Yeah. Are you going to tell us what
I forgot them.
Don't hide them from us.
Well, this actually is not in the piece, but came later. But I mean, the fact that Congressman Murtha finally stood up, that a Democrat finally stood up and actually talked in plain language about the war and how bad it's going. Because we had all of these guys, I mean, Kerry and Hillary Clinton and the rest of them, speaking senatorese about it.
Yes.
You know, or Joe Biden, where depending on which Sunday and which talk show you caught him on, you didn't know where he was, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the fact that Murtha actually came out
in plain language as a human being and as a guy who has been to war, who has been on, you know, has been supportive of war in the past. I mean, he was like a supporter for Bush 1 mm-hmm. for the original Gulf War, and he was also an advisor for Bush 1 in terms of, you know, this George W.'s father would actually reach out across the aisle a bit just to get some other opinions. And now you got this president who's, I think, one of the things, Jim, that if you can comment on a little bit, is how isolated this president has become just by virtue of who he surrounded himself with and his policy failures mm-hmm. at the time. I mean, it seems to me that he's almost completely out of the loop, and they just push him out there to make speeches, to pitch things, to try and salvage what's left of his administration on some level.
Well, it's going to be interesting when the histories of this administration are written, which is how much Bush actually ever did know about what was going on and how plugged in he ever was. Because now the press is acting as if His isolation is increasingly intensified. But when you think about all the time he was out there on the road selling that Social Security thing that didn't go.
Right.
I mean, all those days, it's like,
what was he doing those other? I mean, clearly he wasn't in Washington taking care of business. It was like it was almost like he was just a salesman. It was like everything else was going on without him, as he just stood in front of one group after another and said, you know.
I think that's true with him, though. I think he's the kind of guy who can sit down and just space out. He'll get on the gym, he'll go to the treadmill, and then he'll just sit there and he'll watch TV. You know, from all indications, all he does is surrounds himself with people to tell him what he wants to hear. He doesn't engage intellectually. Mm-hmm. He's completely isolated.
Well, you know, the central question I have, Jim, and maybe this is asking you to be a prognostic, instead of looking back on here, is has he in fact bottomed out? Can he redeem himself from where he is now? He's still got three more years left of this presidency.
See, I don't know if he could bottom out as much as the media machine, the Republican machine, and the talk radio world. They'll make it look as if he bottomed out. They'll make it, because I've noticed recently they keep trying to do this sort of, he's really bottomed. He's on a comeback.
Well, yeah, because they're trying to make it sound as if he's bottomed out and he's moved past the bottom.
Yeah.
What,
yeah.
Did he get like a 1 or 2 point bump in because of the economy?
You know, now they say, well, he went from 35 to 40 in approval.
Yeah, alert the media.
Yeah, so it. And then it's very hard to know, because when you hear their spokesman, on the one hand, some of them are saying, no, he's still got grand ideas that he wants to pull off the last 2 years. And then you hear this other group of advisors saying, no, what he does is he's doing little Clinton things, which is you find one or two small things, symbolic things, that everybody likes
right. And
could agree with.
You open with ice cream and chocolate.
Yeah.
And
then, yeah, put a little few sprinkles on it.
Yeah, yeah. And then you go, but here's where some problems still remain.
Yeah, but a lot of it's going to depend on Iraq. I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on what goes on over there.
Do you think he's going to reshuffle his cabinet? There's been a lot of talk about that. There are rumors that Joe Lieberman might replace Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld said he's not going anywhere. It seems as though Condoleezza Rice, I guess by virtue of the fact she's the only one that doesn't have any kind of scandal taint on her, has become front and center as far as promoting the administration's policies are concerned. Where do you see that going?
Well, the thing is, Bush doesn't seem capable of firing anybody, so the people are only going to leave if they leave on their own steam. Like, if Rumsfeld feels like, I've had it with this, you know, I don't need to do this anymore, I'm of a certain age, and now I want to go out and cash in for one last time, because he could then go on to every defense contract and board and all that.
Well, he's also got the bird flu. What is that? Tamiflu?
Yeah, the Tamiflu. He's part of that the company that owns a patent on the idea of...
He'll make out like a bandit no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, if these guys decide to... I mean, one of the things I'm going to be looking for is... it surfaced in this Newsweek article about Bush as a bubble boy, is how Cheney has curtailed some of his activities due to health concerns. If we start hearing more and more about Cheney's health and... his ticker, you know, that might be the cue for, okay, they're going to try to, like, Cheney is going to exit quietly to the door, and then Bush is going to pull, like, I want Condi as my vice president.
Right,
big name. Ooh. And that could be a big splashy thing that would excite the press.
Do you really think that would happen?
I think it would only happen if Plamegate got too close to Cheney, it looks more and more as if Cheney's going to walk away from that. You know, his health might be worse than we think, because, you know, when you see him, now, I wrote this on the blog, when you see Cheney in public now, he looks like a figure from the old Soviet Union, you know, and with the long black coat and, that ice white head.
Kind of Khrushchev.
Khrushchev, and you feel like at any moment, like... the heart could go, you know.
I'm amazed that he's still alive. Now, it'd be amazing to me if Bush did that. I have no idea what's going to happen in terms of, it's just very hard to call. In my head, I'm so filled with a desire for Schadenfreude. I just hope he keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and that the spin machine starts to break down. Do you think? Who do you think some of the heroes are this last year, Jim, in terms of turning around some of the cultural right wing spin that was so that we were so saturated with? Because it seems to me that we definitely have turned a corner, and I think there are people that were pivotal in doing that.
Well, I think in the media, people like Keith Olbermann have done a lot. I think a lot of the lefty bloggers have pushed on. Mm-hmm. In a sense, I'm backtracking a bit. In terms of one of the lowlifes, I mean, one of the things that we've realized this last year is how we cannot depend upon the so-called establishment press particularly the Beltway press for anything.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, we thought, you know, Judith Miller was bad, and then we realized what Bob Woodward's been up to.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, the way the whole press has been revealed through the Valerie Plame thing.
Yep.
You know, which is they're more concerned about keeping their access than they are actually telling, you know, their readers what's going on. But I think the lefty bloggers have done a lot of good. I think we've had a great resurgence in documentaries that have sort of there's one coming out early next year called Why We Fight, which is about the military-industrial complex and essentially how we got into Iraq, how we made that weird veer off, you know, after 9/11. It's like, why are we in Iraq? You know,
yeah.
How did that, but it's about that thing that's, you know, that basically people are going to be studying for years of how we got to Iraq from September 11th.
And Greenwald stuff, Al Fox and the Walmart thing.
Yeah.
Cindy Sheehan, of course.
Cindy Sheehan was very important.
Yeah,
because
one
thing, she was able to sort of, she had a weird sort of serenity so that she never, as much as she got attacked by the right, she never, like, got pulled down in it. In a funny way, she sort of floated past it.
Transcended, yeah.
You know, and the fact that she was so, and she also shamed a lot of people by the fact that she went down to Crawford. There were so many people who were against the war, but they're kind of like, well, we don't really want to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Still got a few of them in Congress.
Yeah. Well, we have.
How about that? Any politicians, Jim? Any,
I can't say that anybody.
That's sad,
anybody's heard. Because, you know, when you look at him, like someone like Barack Obama, I mean, he's a young guy, he's coming up, but I see him so cautiously phrasing everything he's doing, calibrating, because all these guys want to go to higher office. They don't want to do the one thing early in their career.
Right, that taints them.
You know? He's getting a lot of heat in certain quarters for not being a little bit more forthright.
Yeah.
So now let's shift gears a little bit. By the way, right, Gilead Sciences, that's the one Donald Rumsfeld is a big stockholder in terms of, they have the patent on the stuff that's in Tamiflu. I hate when I mix up or I forget my conspiracy stuff.
Mm.
the real stuff. It is. Now, are you sad about Pryor? I mean, I guess we saw it coming. He's been sick for a long time. But what do you think of him in terms of his power in comedy?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I think about Richard Pryor, with a lot of comedians, I think about how I remember them when they were with Johnny Carson, you know, because Pryor and Carson were brilliant together.
Yeah.
Because they were so different. But Carson, I mean, first of all, comedians knew what a genius Pryor was.
Right.
I mean, he was not a guy that any other comedian would say, well, you know, I think he's kind of
overrated.
No one ever did that with Richard Pryor. And when you see the clips of him as a young guy, he was just so beautifully physical.
Yeah.
The way he uses his hands and, you know, there's such flow and fluidity. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think of the, particularly the concert films. I mean, the Sunset Strip film.
Sure.
The one where he talks about his heart attack.
Oh, yeah.
That is absolutely, I don't know, it's one of the concert, one of the live concerts.
It's not the first one. It is the first one where the heart, and he starts going,
Should
have thought about that when you're eating all that pork.
I also think of that, of his great credo about his ode to cowardice, about how more important it is to run.
Yes.
Like, and teach your woman to run.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did.
Yeah. So she can keep up with you.
Oh, wow. That's so wild. I was talking about cowardice on stage recently. I got to re-listen to that. It's 50 past. We'll hear a little prior when we come back. We're sitting with Jim Walcott.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 55 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
We're
talking to Vanity Fair's Jim Walcott right now, the author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants. Are we going to hear that Pryor clip? Are we? You know, we're talking about the death of Richard Pryor. A lot of people don't realize Richard Pryor won the Mark Twain Award. Do you win it or you are honored with it?
Yeah.
Steve Martin was just honored with it. I got to catch up. I feel like going to the Museum of Broadcasting and just going through all those old Pryor shows. Let's hear that segment that we've got planned here, Brendan.
Oh, went to jail for income tax evasion, right? You know, I didn't know about no taxes. I told the judge, said, Your Honor, I forgot. You know, he said, you remember next year, nigga. Start writing on your ass. They give niggas time like it's lunch down there. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that sticks, you know. He just, it's sad, but, you know, I don't know if he was in a lot of pain, but MS is a long and trying disease. And sure I know is. That he would come around the Comedy Store right before he mm-hmm. got real sick. And it's interesting. Did you read his autobiography?
No.
I read his autobiography, and it was beautiful because the way he wrote was almost like a child. And I don't know if it was because he started to get the MS, mm-hmm. but it was him recounting his experience as a child. But he wrote in very childish prose. It's worth reading. It's a very interesting book. And let me wrap up here with Jim. I thanks for coming down, Jim. This is going to be
I'm going to miss this show.
I mean, you too, man.
I'm going to miss as a listener. I'm going to miss as a guest.
I know, but you've certainly been great. It's been great talking to you. I've always been a huge fan of yours because we go way back. You wrote a little bit about me in The New Yorker when I did my HBO special, like in 95. Yeah. And then I used to see you around my neighborhood. And then when I got this show, I was just so excited that you were able to be such a regular guest. Yeah. Well, good luck with the book. Are you writing another book? What's going on?
I'm sort of like trying to figure it out. Okay. You know, it's like I've decided like I'm packing it in for the rest of the year. Like, you know, I'll wait till next year to think of
That's
something.
That's right. Take your time. So, but in the meantime, you can go to jameswolcott.com and check out the blog and also the book out now, Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, Eluding the News in a Time of Terror. It's been great fun, Jim. Thanks.
Yes, thanks, Jim.
I guess we'll be back with Barbara Boxer. She's actually going to come in, right?
Senator Barbara Boxer.
That's the first time a senator's been in. 57 Pass, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, how are you, of course, good morning. These are the last days of Morning Sedition. This has been a bold experiment that did not go unappreciated by the thousands of people who got it. And believe me, we are grateful, as we are sad, but I will be honest with you. We're not gonna disappoint you, folks. This last week will be a bash. We're gonna have great guests, clips from the past, and a bittersweet reverie. Today, in just a few minutes, we're gonna talk to Barbara Boxer. Jim Walcott was just here. David Poland, we're gonna talk to later in the show. We got Eric Bogosian coming up this week. Susan Sarandon will be here Wednesday. Robert Reich is gonna come later in the week. So, we're not gonna be morose about the demise of our show. We're gonna try and be optimistic. Because who knows, I might end up on this network in another incarnation coming from the West Coast. But right now, our next guest is a U.S. Senator from the state of California. Her first novel, A Time to Run, released in November, tells the story of a liberal female senator from California who takes on an ultra-conservative nomination for the Supreme Court. Well, that sounds like such a stretch.
Yeah, right.
She swears it's fiction. Senator Barbara Boxer joins us in the studio. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Good morning, Senator.
Let's start with reality. Is there any chance that we're going to actually stop Samuel Alito from being on the next Supreme Court justice there? Is that going to happen?
There's a possibility. The more we know, the more we don't like what mm-hmm. we see. And this is a man with a very long paper trail and some very isolated thoughts. For example, he was overturned several times. He just stood alone in several decisions, many decisions, on the appellate court in which he serves, one of which he said that he didn't think that the Congress had the power to grant family and medical leave to you if you work for a state agency.
Right.
So the Supreme Court said, no, you're wrong on that. He also said Congress didn't have the reach to have any sensible gun laws, including one that almost everyone I know agrees on, which is to protect our families from folks who would purchase a fully automatic machine gun.
Without a waiting period or anything. Just go buy it. Yeah.
In other words, he didn't think we had the reach to pass the most sensible of all type of gun laws.
Incredible. Now, your book, A Time to Run, seems to have prophesied the coming of Harriet Myers. How did you pull that one off?
I don't know how this happened, but it was very odd. About 2 years ago, when Chronicle Books bought the book, we had a little celebratory lunch at a place called Rose's Cafe in San Francisco, where a lot of writers go. It was very nice for me. First time I visited there. And I raised my water glass and said, hooray, I'm done, because it was so many years in the writing, this book. And so my story editor said, well, not so fast. What do you mean? Well, he said, you take your character, Ellen Fisher, all the way to the Senate. You show how bruising it is and the fallout in her personal life and all of that and how hard it is and the betrayals. But you don't show her actually facing a do-or-die type of issue in the mm-hmm. Senate. And you're missing that. And I realized he was right, so went back to the drawing boards. And this is a couple of years ago when we thought one way to show it would be through a contentious Supreme Court nomination. Now, who knew this would all happen? It was one of those things, and when life started to imitate art, the publisher said, well, get this book out there, and they pushed up the release date.
So now we can't know. We're not going to tell us what happens in the book. And now we're trying to speculate on reality.
Read the book.
I'm good, of course.
It's a quick read. You'll finish it in 24 hours.
I know. I didn't want to tip the ending, you know, but I am hoping that...
Say anymore.
I'm not going to say anymore. All right, well, let's get back to reality. You know, you were very tough on Condoleezza Rice during her confirmation hearings. Now, is there any momentum? We always get the sense here that the Democrats, they don't have a clear platform. They're not as together as they should be on most things. I mean, you know, Joe Lieberman is despicable to me right now. I find it very sad, whatever. I mean, I didn't expect anything different, but do you find contention? I mean, everyone seems so polite in the Senate when you guys talk about each other. It's almost annoying.
Well, there's a reason why we have to be polite to each other, no matter how mad we may be. And it has to do with the rules of the Senate. Isolate yourself.
Yeah.
You'll never get a thing done, so you're kind of forced to be polite and friendly.
Oh,
but it's kind of the way it is. But here's a couple of things. I think the press ignores when the Republicans split. I mean, you've got McCain in a battle royale, you know, with the president over torture mm-hmm. and the vice president who mm-hmm. wants to have anything we want to say about no torture is fine, but exempt the CIA.
Right.
I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that's what you do. So they ignore that. They ignore the fact that Chuck Hagel has been very critical of this administration and that Lincoln Chafee, mm-hmm. has essentially been against the war from the start, voted against the war, is very dovish on this war. They ignore it, but of course, when we have Joe Lieberman, it gets all the coverage in the world. But the truth is, when it comes to votes of conscience and matters of conscience, you're not going to find a monolithic view. Now, it's very frustrating, but this is how I deal with it. My party is the party that has forced this president to at least discuss a strategy, you know,
yeah.
and a plan.
Yes.
My party is united in terms of finishing the investigation by the Senate Intelligence Committee into whether or not this president misused or cherry-picked intelligence. So I feel proud of that. Now, I happen to be of the view that our presence in Iraq is fueling the problems.
Yes, absolutely.
So I share, you know, Murtha's view, and I think it's very important that after this election, we begin bringing our troops back, redeploying them, keeping some in the region but out of there, and start with the National Guard, because let me tell you, we need our National Guard at home.
That's for sure. I mean, you could see that in light of some of the recent stuff with Hurricane Katrina. And,
mm-hmm.
Sure. Senator, later this week, the president's going to be meeting with some Democrats, apparently, some, quote, conservative Democrats. What do you think is going to come out of that? What would you say to some of those conservative Democrats as they go to sit and apparently break bread with the president?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Listen to what he has to say. Try to see if we can make him understand that his policies aren't working. You know, with the exception of Joe Lieberman, who seems to have embraced you know, the Bush policy. I really don't know other Democrats that agree with him down the line at all. And even Joe Lieberman voted with 78 other senators to say to the president, you need to be more forthcoming, you need to send us more reports, you need to tell the Iraqi people that in 06 they have to start taking over the reins of their own government and their own security. So even he has voted, even though his words have been so, I don't know, over the top in my view, about the president's policies, he, at least he voted, you know, to criticize them.
Quick question on another subject. We don't know yet what's going to happen to Tukey Williams. What's your position? Should he be granted clemency or should he be executed?
Let me answer it this way to you. I am not the governor, but if I were to be, what I would do is call everyone in on both sides of it, the families of the people that that suffered, assuming he did those murders, which he says he did not, but every court so far has not given him opportunity to reverse that. But I would also want to know, did his life's work as an adult also save lives? And I think there's a real case to be made here on that. And, you know, if we do believe, and by the way, I believe in the death penalty for heinous crimes, but I also do believe that somebody could change. And I do believe it's important to weigh that. So I think you can see where I'm headed with this. And I hope that the governor looks into his heart. We're not talking about letting anyone out of prison ever. I mean, the choice is whether you spare the life of this man. Did he do things to make up for his past? Or do you put him to death? And when you spare his life, he's not going to have the possibility of parole. And I think that's important to make that case.
Now, but it's also, I think, when you're weighing this thing, is to see that the idea of a prison is to rehabilitate on some level, and this could be a great example of that.
Supposedly it is.
That's
it
right.
Is.
So you're going to hang out for a minute. We're going to talk a little bit more about
time.
The book,
fantastic.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about California. I'd like to talk a little bit about Schwarzenegger, about Duke Cunningham. I got a lot of questions, I think.
I think they'll be interesting.
Okay. 15 Passer with Senator Barbara Boxer. Stay with us.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
American Association of Retired Persons is opposing President Bush's plans for Social Security. Why would they do that? If you want to know the truth about old people, talk to the people who know them.
Old people are needy. I need a ride. I need a walker. I need something to eat. Could somebody please help me? I'm in the toilet. I can't get out. It's horrendous.
I had to spend 15 minutes helping my mother find her glasses because she forgot where she put them. Just forgot.
Dude, they crap in their pants.
Enough about World War II. I get it. You were there.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to dinner at 4 o'clock, you really don't need more money.
You liberated Auschwitz. You were there. I understand. Can we watch The Apprentice now?
And when they wear those diapers, they can pee right on themselves, too. Just pee.
Brian! My name is Brian! God!
I remember this one time, my uncle, he's on the floor. I thought he was having a heart attack or he's dead or something. Turns out he wasn't. Just on the floor.
Who the hell is Bobby? Nobody knows Bobby!
Dude, they crapped their pants.
Old people. They oppose President Bush's plans for Social Security. Isn't it time they died already? Paid for by Swift Boat Veterans for whatever cause is being funded by the right-wing millionaires at the moment.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Okay, it's 22 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Our guest in studio, the first senator to ever be in our studio after 20 months on the air. You are the first senator. Barbara Boxer from California is here. Her new novel, her first novel that's taken a long time to put together, A Time to Run, released in November. You should go get it because I'm imagining if they want to know about Barbara Boxer, they're going to get it in this book. Yes?
Well, the philosophy, yes. Not the personal story, but the philosophy.
Okay, not even a little? Not even a little?
Not really. I made my character really different and younger and with big red hair.
All right, let's talk about that. Here's an interesting question. This is just about my show, but some guy has compared the, like, first the brilliance of talented Marty Kaplan goes, but Jerry Springer stays. Now, Morning Sedition and the Fed was Mark Mariner out. I have a theory. I think the Democratic National Committee is secretly running Air America. Here's the MO. Step one, get all the talent and ideas. Step two, undermine all the talent and ideas. Step three, who knows? Nobody's paying attention anymore.
Boo.
Oh, my God.
You're laying that at the feet of Howard Dean. I don't think it's
I think this might be the old Democratic National Committee.
Oh, I see.
Now, is there...
They called him back.
Yeah. is there a schism? Is there a tension between the Senate, the Democratic Party, and Howard Dean? Do you find... Because we're constantly hearing that there's problems in... And I think he's a visionary guy who's got a lot of guts.
Actually, we get along great. He comes to our Senate caucus lunches, Democratic caucus lunches. We like him. We work with him. We're messaging and working together to frame the issues. No, I mean, that's all, again, the mainstream press is constantly trying to destroy Howard Dean. And, you know, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, Howard said something about the war. It was very thoughtful. They picked several words out of it, as they did with me and John Kerry, mm-hmm. and play it and say, you know, we're surrendering or something. It's ridiculous. You mm-hmm. know, that's what they do. And we all really work well together. Look, we all know that we're a very big umbrella, this Democratic Party. You have to be if you're going to represent states like New York on the one hand, California, and, you know, try to maintain your foothold in Florida and other places. It's just, there's different politics everywhere, so we are a big umbrella, and sometimes it's hard, but at least we just don't walk in a mindless way the way our friends in the Republican Party. I was saying to one of you two marks before that, you know, there's only three moderate Republicans left in the Senate.
I was trying to figure out, oh, that's right, Chafee, Snow, and Collins.
That's basically it. I mean, Specter's changed, the others once in a blue moon, but that's it. And when I got to the Senate in 93, so it's not that long ago, they're like 11 or 12.
Well, now, but do you think that, like, we constantly criticize people, the folks that we call centricrats. I mean, I understand it's a big umbrella, but I mean, you stand for democratic values, and there are mm-hmm. people who are Democrats that stand for democratic values, but people who try to pander and triangulate to Republicans that might come over to this side, I don't necessarily think that's the best strategy, do you?
Look, I don't think it's a matter of strategy.
Okay.
I really don't. I think it's a matter of who you represent, where you're from, and we cannot tell people that they have to be like we are. You know, yeah. The only perfect candidate is you, for you. You know, and people have to represent the people who send them there. Now, I don't respect people who vote in a way that they don't really believe in. Mm-hmm. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I do respect, because I've been around for so long. I've been the same my whole life. I've mm-hmm. never changed. I've always been progressive, and I've always been on that side. But I, you know, now that I've lived longer and I visited all these different states, you know, sometimes you got to bring people along, and that's what we have to do.
Well, you know, I'm glad you came by. I feel like I could talk for a while. And I like when you say look.
You look.
Works good, right? I got one really, really quick question.
Yeah.
Do you think that the compromise that they made on the Patriot Act is going to hold? They're now bipartisan group of six senators who are talking about filibustering, including your colleague Russell Feingold. Up or down?
Well, I hope the filibuster prevails, because if you get a situation where Patrick Leahy, who is really bending over backwards, to be fair, cannot sign that conference report, I think the Patriot Act could be in some kind of trouble. I mean, there's a couple of things in there that are awful, like sneak and peek. Somebody can come into your home or my home, ruffle around, do all this, don't even leave a note, don't even tell you they're there or they took things. That's one thing. Somebody else can go and look through your library records, yep. bookstore records. Wrong.
Yep, it is wrong, and I hope that they stop it. But I'm so glad you wrote a book, because finally you came in. That's that was nice.
Thanks a lot.
And it's nice meeting you. And the book is available now, A Time to Run, Barbara Box's first novel. Go out and get that and read and learn and be entertained. Quick read, you said, right?
It is.
Okay.
All right.
27 past. Stay with us. We're going to have David Poland in a few minutes. So we'll talk movies. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Hope you're doing well. We got about four more days, four more shows, my friends, and that's the end of this. But as you know, Mark Riley, the Mark Riley Show, will be on from 5 to 7. We're thinking around January 2nd, the beginning's
January
going to be.
January 2nd, yeah, it is going to be January.
We're going to go with that. January 2nd, the launch of the Mark Riley Show from 5 to 7, the Rachel Maddow Show from 7 to 9. I imagine we'll be launching on the roughly the same day.
Same day.
All right. That's it. The new morning lineup on Air America Radio starting the beginning of January. I will hopefully know by the end of this week whether I am going to be continuing on with this network in the evening. Out of Los Angeles. Before we bring our next guest, David Poland, on from Movie City News and the HotButton.com blog, I want to play this. This is an advertisement for King Kong.
Good things never last, Mr. Denham.
Newsweek says King Kong is epic. A surprisingly tender, even heartbreaking film. Jaw-droppingly brilliant. An amazing adventure that has it all. Spectacular special effects. Great non-stop action. All combined in the eternal love story that is the essence of King Kong.
You're the one, Ann. Who was always going to be you?
King Kong is one of the best movies ever made.
That is unbelievable.
PG-13.
Let's talk to David Poland about this. He's on the West Coast. David, now, I heard, obviously, they're pitching King Kong as a love story, and I heard they cut out one of the most inappropriate, grossest sex scenes ever made in movie history. Is that true?
Would you buy tampons from this monkey?
they're using Coldplay to trick the little girls into the theaters.
And it's working, I think. It's already affecting them properly. I don't know if they actually ever had the fumbling bosom scene that we all know and love from the Jessica Lange version of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, infamously, they say that there is a Faye Ray version where she gets fingered, so to speak,
uh-huh.
by the monkey, and
uh-huh.
We get to see her little young tenderness. But,
uh-huh.
You know, definitely not in this movie.
I was thinking that like they would have moved the technology up to where we literally had some sort of pole dance going on, but that's just the way my sick brain works. So let's talk about movies this weekend. I have made some bets with people, but I might be heading in the wrong direction. I think that Brokeback Mountain is going to alienate the middle of America, but judging by how it did this weekend, that doesn't seem to be true, huh?
Well, you know, considering that they were in New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.
The jury may still
America
be out.
Has really spoken.
But in terms of how stuff opens like this, I mean, it broke some records. I know it's only in cities, and obviously it was going to do well. I guess what I'm getting at is, what do you think? Are you with me or what?
Oh, I don't think there's much question. They know that Brokeback Mountain is not going to do business in the Midwest. I mean, in every town, they're going to be, you know, whoever, anybody who's gay. I mean, it's a gay anthem movie for the year. There's no question about that. But they're trying not to make it that. They're trying to avoid it being that primarily, and it's an issue not only with moviegoers in the Midwest, it's also an issue with Academy members. I think that we all are very clear that Brokeback's going to get nominated for Best Picture and many other Academy Award nominations, but it's still not clear whether it's going to play well with all but a certain percentage of the Academy.
What record did it break this weekend exactly? It's hard for me.
The largest per screen average for, you know, even in general, the largest per-screen average. It was only on 5 screens.
That's a fixed game, though.
$100,000 per screen.
Yeah.
It was very impressive. I mean, they sold out a lot of shows in a lot of cities, but it's only New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco. So it's a very specific audience, and the gay audience for this movie has been waiting for months and months and months to see this movie. It has been put out there as the best, you know, as the most important thing to happen to gay people since, I don't know what joke you want to insert here, but,
since gay was invented?
Since gay was invented.
There you go.
The greatest invention since KY Jelly.
Oh my God. Now, David, given how much a lot of these studios, depend on international distribution, I gotta figure Brokeback Mountain's not gonna do real well outside the U.S., no?
Well, Brokeback Mountain is not a terribly expensive movie, and that's part of it. I mean, the movie cost less than $20 million, so they're going to make an enormous amount of money on this movie one way or the other. They're not expecting the picture. I can't imagine that anybody at Focus really thinks this movie is going to make much more than, say, $30 million. I think that's about the top for this movie, regardless. If it wins Best Picture or it becomes a very serious candidate for Best Picture, maybe it could push to 40. But there's really not a whole lot of, there's an assumption that there's a large percentage of the audience just not interested in seeing this picture.
You know, we were talking about, you saw that movie, the Showtime Homecoming, right?
Yes.
How powerful was that thing? I was plugging it last week, and we talked about it last week. We talked to Sam Hamm. Let me just make sure the audience knows what I'm talking about. It's a Masters of Horror series on Showtime. It's called Homecoming. It's about basically the zombies, the corpses of dead American soldiers from this war being provoked out of the grave to vote out the president. And I thought it was masterful satire and comedy and horror.
Yeah, and I thought it was also, you know, even though clearly it was about George Bush, I think it was also beyond being about George Bush. I mean, it was a very powerful message, I think, about, you know, how we quickly forget the men who were left behind in these wars.
Do you think the reason it didn't get a lot of play in sort of mainstream right-wing propaganda outlets is that it couldn't help? But if you watched it, whether you're right-wing or left-wing or whoever the hell you were, you couldn't help but be affected by its message. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, they also probably wrote it off as a, you know, just another silly horror movie. I mean, the rest of the series on Showtime is a lot of TNA and a lot of, you know, very quiet, naked, topless women, you know, running around. So it's, the series doesn't have the cachet.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Dante actually, you know, sent a copy to me in my case a couple weeks before it came out, working on getting, you know, attention for it himself.
Uh-huh.
So that's how committed he was to it. But obviously Showtime wasn't chasing people like myself to get the word out there.
Right.
It's hard to break through that. Certainly, I don't think it was going to be on the O'Reilly factor, as anything other than being, you know, parodied. But the fact that they didn't parody it, probably indicates that the power of it was overwhelming.
I think so.
Now, yeah. David, we see from the box office receipts, of course, that Narnia film, demolished all the competition, but Syriana finished second. Were you surprised?
I wasn't overwhelmingly surprised. It was a little bit higher opening than I expected, but they sold it very effectively, and it's gotten a lot of great reviews and a lot of people talking about it. Had a huge purse screen the week before. It wasn't as big as Brokeback Mountain, but had a big purse screen. But $12 million is a really strong opening for that movie, considering it's very, you know, very political and very dry and not, quote-unquote, an entertainment. And it'll be very interesting to see how it holds up.
But, you think it's going to get... You think it's going to get traction? It is sort of dense. How do you think it's going to fare in the bulk of the country there?
It's going to be hard. I mean, I think it's going to be hard in big cities. If you talk to people in Los Angeles or New York, they had a hard time with it also. It's not that it's really a movie you have to kind of sit there with a crossword puzzle pencil and figure out some of what's going on. And in fact, we're talking about doing a guide to Syriana so you can figure out who's in the CIA, who works for the oil company,
right. Who
works for a bank.
Yeah. I went to the press screening. If I didn't have the, we talked to Stephen Gagan, in studio last week, and
it's a very gay show today.
and we talked to him last week. We talked to Bob Baer the week before, and I tell you, it is so nuanced that if I didn't have the press packet to get me through what was going on, anytime I think you're sitting in a movie and you actually hear audience members going, "Wait, is that the same guy who was at the thing before?" You know, you're into some territory that could be confusing.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie because a lot of people were like, you know, okay, so what does the guy from the bank have something to do with the guy who's in office? Having to do with a guy who's in, you know.
Right, but you know, I would be great to release a companion just because it's important information that people need to know about how politics functions in the world.
Yeah, no, it's it's a strong, thoughtful movie. For me, it was a little bit dry. I wish there was a little bit more emotion in the movie, but a very interesting picture, and certainly one people are examining. And I'm pleased that people are willing to go out there and see it. I mean, part of it that it's a George Clooney movie, and people were talking about how much weight he gained for it and things like that, all of which makes me want to go on a diet immediately. But it's certainly an interesting picture.
Some great performances in that movie. Matt Damon and yeah. Stephen Wright. Jeffrey Wright. Genius. And not a bad performance in that film, actually.
No. Well, you know, when you have good taste and you hire the great actors, it's amazing how well things can go.
Amanda Peet was even good, and I don't love her.
Yeah.
How about any big bombs here at the end of the year?
Well, you know, Ian Flux was actually not as big a bomb as I think they expected it to be.
I saw it.
You saw it?
Yeah.
Did it change your life?
I thought it was there was too many things I didn't understand. I mean, I liked the way the movie looked, and I understood the premise, but it seemed like there was a lot of things that if you had read the comic books, you would know, and they didn't explain it to me.
I don't even know. Were there comic books?
There was a graphic novel.
As I recall, Aeon Flux, the thing about it was is that when they didn't talk, it was better than when they did talk.
Yeah.
And so the movie really, if it had just been a silent movie, it would probably have been better. There were more shots up Charlize Theron's legs, between her legs,
yeah,
than any movie I could ever imagine.
I found that to be very rewarding.
It was like the dirty parts of North Country that you never saw.
Yeah, oh boy, that movie was horrible. I like the way Influx looked. I think it actually started as these shorts on MTV, but it was later made into a graphic novel. Now, the producers, what happened? Is that even coming out?
The producers, it's coming out. It's kind of sad because there's actually a good movie in there. People are less and less enthusiastic about it. Much as they are for Memoirs of Geisha, which just opened this weekend, did a decent, a very nice per screen average this weekend. Also on like 8 screens, I think, around the country, but just doesn't have the kind of complete thing that people were looking for in those kind of movies.
Hey, with the Geisha or the producers?
They're both for different reasons. I mean, Producers, I think, is a very likable film.
Yeah.
There are people who really hate it.
Yeah.
But if you like the show and if you like musicals and you like comedy, you know, in the kind of a broad sense of comedy, it's a pleasant experience. There's nothing really pleasant about it. Geisha, on the other hand, at times is kind of like wanting to, you know, gouge your own eyes out.
Right.
But it's very, you know, it's a very strange thing watching a movie about Japanese people in which they're speaking broken English.
All right. So, David, I'm going to be out in L.A. in a couple weeks, and if everything goes well, I'm going to be doing a show out of L.A., so I might be able to get you on the air at a more reasonable hour. Are you into it?
Yeah, absolutely. You're kind of like the Aslan of morning radio.
You should see my mane.
You die so that you may come back to life and save others.
Yeah, hopefully it's only going to be a few short weeks. We'll see, man.
Excellent.
All right, take it easy. Good talking.
Take care, David.
Thank you, guys. Have a good.
All right, 45 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Looks like Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, has gone out of the way to come in early. Are you part of the cult of Randy yet? I mean, is she sucking you in, Pashman? Hold the answer, because I'm concerned about this. Some people have asked me, it's like, is Pashman part of it now? Is he part of the Randy cult? I don't know. These are questions that would be answered momentarily, 46 past the hour.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
I have turned the national anthem into a Christmas carol.
Oh, no.
A hymn to the Sturch, if you like.
No, I wouldn't go there if I were
well,
you. Please.
I'm going there right now.
No, please.
Who say, can you see by the Lord's early light?
No.
What so proudly we hailed at the birth. Jesus Christ.
Oh, come on. God, help us. Please. Come on. Come on. Stop it, man. No.
Save your head, pray.
Wait. Jesus wore spangles?
For the land of the God.
Oh, no.
And the high king of
Come on.
The Jews.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Well, that's that. 52 past the hour, we're going to land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's a little bit of Lawton Smalls from last year's Christmas edition of the Lawton Smalls. Hopefully, Lawton Smalls will be with me out there in L.A. if we can make this show happen. I'm really looking forward to having the possibility of building a tighter, very efficient comedy-slash-news show on the L.A. airwaves that may be broadcastable here into New York City in the maybe at some point in the evening, I would hope. And I'm hoping to draw from some of the people you've grown to love on our show. Well, I just want to show this before I look at this, Riley. We thought you two, this is an email. No, it's not snail mail. It's a real letter.
Uh-oh.
I want to talk to Pashman, though. But look, someone just said, we thought you two would appreciate the fact that you've been made into an ornament on our pagan solstice tree worshipping symbol, a.k.a. Christmas tree. Look, Riley. Someone made a little ornament with us in there.
Oh, my God.
With our little cartoon images on their Christmas tree. Thank you so much. That's from Brian and Kristen, who I think developed their relationship at our live performances. Look at that. Sitting right here.
Hey.
Dan, oh, wait, be careful on that mic, man. You've been told no mic time, my friend. Hey, no, look, I had to have you in no matter what. I'll take the blame for it. It's Dan Pashman is here in studio. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, one of the creators of the original Morning Sedition program.
Hi, guys.
How you doing, man?
What's up, Dan?
Hey, Mark.
You've been sort of taken from us and put on Randy Rhoads' show, which turned out to be a good thing because we're not going to be on every Friday. but we miss you. I miss
you guys too.
So you had a weird dream. Can you share it?
Yeah, I was going to tell you guys about this. This is like top 10 signs that you've been working at Air America Radio for too long is when you have dreams that are so completely steeped in politics like this.
Yeah.
I had this dream that Bush was at a press conference and he's giving a press conference and he goes to take questions and all of a sudden these questions start coming out but none of the reporters see where the questions are coming from and he's getting really flustered. They're really hard questions.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it turns out that Joe Biden is underneath the podium with a secret microphone. And he's throwing this barrage of this tirade against Bush. And then all of a sudden, all these other Democratic senators came out from behind backstage.
Yeah.
And they were being led by Thomas Carper from Delaware.
Huh.
But you know how like sometimes you know that a person is a person in the dream, but you don't know what they look like?
Oh,
wow. So he looked like Gene Siskel.
Thomas Carper doesn't even appear on television.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why him.
Oh, my God.
And Thomas Carper and Joe Biden were leading this, and Bush crumbled.
Yeah.
He crumbled. He was flustered, and he started like pouting and crying and just ran off the stage. And
it was,
all the press was taking pictures, and it was this huge media moment.
Wow. That's quite a dream.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend's been away a long time.
Yeah.
When's she coming back?
My dreams aren't even bothering anymore.
Your fiance is still in Slovakia?
She's still there, man. It's been a long time.
How long has it been, dude?
Like 4 months.
Oh.
3.5 months.
And you've got three more?
1.5 months more.
Oh, that's all right. And she's okay? You talk to her every 5 minutes?
Yeah, every day.
Yeah.
She's got the internet phone, so it's basically
the
free.
Skype. I got to give me a Skype.
It's good stuff.
Just to have a Skype. Yeah, okay. Well, Pashman, it's great seeing you. Thanks for coming in early.
My pleasure. I'll be around. I'll stick around this week.
All right. We're going to go in and we're going to have some more of Roxy's Walks. You got a plan? You going to go get some bagels?
I've already scoped the whole thing out.
Okay. Uh-oh. All right. So now it's time for the liberal agenda. Here's the facts from the Streisand compound giving us a weekly rundown of our important liberal causes. Here we go. Write these down, liberal soldiers. One, the far right says there is some sort of war on Christmas, and apparently we've all been fighting it. So good work, I guess. Two, in the interest of teaching diversity, tell school kids that Rudolph was Jewish and gay. Three, remind people of the danger of catching avian flu from swans a-swimming, geese a-laying, calling birds, French hens, turtle doves, and partridges, even in a pear tree. Four, go to rodeos and hand out copies of Brokeback Mountain to promote gay cowboy tolerance. Five, use the Freedom of Information Act to demand to see what Halliburton got Dick Cheney for Christmas. And a big bag of money. A big bag of doubloons. Today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Bill Clinton said Bush was flat wrong to reject the Kyoto Treaty. Wake up, sheeple. The other way to end that sentence is, and everything else. Yay. Morning sedition. Kayla, I really want you to take care of yourself. Can you tonight, please? Because I can't have this sick Kalo in for the last week of the show. We're requiring you. We're relying on you to be Kalo.
I'll try, man.
Full on. I brought in some echinacea tea. And even though they said that Echinacea does absolutely nothing to treat a common cold, it's still in a nice box that will make you feel like it has power.
I think I had the flu, though. But yeah, I'll still take it.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for coming into work. The,
I had it for a while.
The flu, it's horrendous. You have the body aches and the whole thing?
Oh, big time.
Oh, no. That's bad.
Oh, man. Now, that really does.
You know, it's sad as I am that you have that. Now I'm going to spend the whole day wondering if I'm getting it. Yeah. All right. Thanks for that. Tomorrow, what do we got there, Riley?
We've got former Labor Secretary Robert Reich.
That's going to be good.
And Eric Bogosian.
Bogosian and Sarandon is, Susan Sarandon is going to be here on Wednesday. And Kevin Pollak. Kevin Pollak, who's going to, that's interesting. He's never been on the show.
Nope.
Gonna do his, I got to get Tim Robbins' phone number again from Susan Sarandon. That's going to be an awkward question. Because he left me a message. I'm like, I got the number. And since I'm going to be in L.A., I thought I'd call him to maybe get him on the new show. And then now I don't have the number. So maybe she heard me do this and they'll make it easy.
Sedition on Air America.